I'm David Suchet, and this is Blood Ties.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Blood Ties podcast. I'm Molly Wantsall, and I'm here with my father, Jeffrey Wantsall.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. Thank you for listening. It's sunny today, which makes a change. It's been grey all January.
Has been a bit rainy. Jeffrey's been very poorly.
Yes, but I am recovering, I'm pleased to say.
That's good.
And one bit of intriguing news I have this week is that I've done a commentary on Terence Rattigan's play and film, The Winslow Boy, which comes out this week. And my colleagues at Studio Canal are very keen that I should mention it.
Oh, excellent. Well, how can we can buy that on DVD, can we?
Yes, it's DVD or Blu-ray.
Can we get it from like a streamer or do we need to buy it?
I think you probably need to buy it. I'm not absolutely sure.
Okay, we'll see if we can find a link and put it in our
But I did notes. I did about 25 minute commentary. I don't know exactly what's used. I mean, I filmed for about an hour and a bit, hour and a half. I don't know exactly what's used, but it's a very good film and it stands up. I mean, yes, of course, it's black and white and it's rather old fashioned, and but it has a dynamic performance by, my mind is going, Robert Donat as Sir Robert Morton.
Donat was in the 39 Steps.
He was indeed, absolutely right. And had terrible asthma and died very young.
Oh,
he also was in Goodbye, Mr. Chips, the original. Absolutely wonderful screen actor.
Hmm.
And plagued by asthma. Terrible. Awful. Anyway, a very nice piece, and I'm proud of having done it. It's the second commentary I've done on the Rattigan. I did one about 2 years ago on The Sound Barrier, which was an original screenplay he did.
There was a time, listeners, when Jeffrey wrote books about people who didn't kill people.
Yes.
Slightly lighter.
Yes, before Frederick West.
A slightly lighter window when Dad wrote about Cary Grant and Terence Rattigan. And
yeah, James Goldsmith.
Slightly jollier.
Slightly jollier field.
Yeah.
I'm very interested, however, darling, that I got my PLR, you know, my public lending right, analysis through this week. Boy, oh boy. Are they taking out pure evil and lifers from libraries?
People are keen on the...
Oh.
Yeah?
I mean, it's been extraordinary.
Great.
Quite extraordinary.
Well, if they're borrowing your book, I'm happy.
Well, and I also had one of those wonderful moments in the street last night.
It happened.
Okay. this is not a word of exaggeration. There's a man in a wheelchair, quite elderly, and a lady is pushing him, and she's got a plaster across the front of her nose, looking slightly and...
fragile.
A lady, presumably his carer or his wife, I didn't really know.
Mm.
Anyway, she grabs me by the arm and says, "Oh, I love your shows."
Oh, my word.
And I said, "Thank you very much."
Oh, my goodness. How exciting.
Absolutely extraordinary. I mean, it happens now and again. But this one was literally yesterday.
You were grabbed
as
well.
I was grabbed.
Gosh.
Well... Anyway, with that, rather. On that note.
We should get on with it.
We should indeed.
Oh, now I've forgotten the name of the person.
It's called...
We're trying to branch out, listeners, and do more subjects from different areas of the world.
Yes.
Especially because we're thinking about our listeners. We've got lots of listeners in the US and in Canada and also in Australia.
We have. So this case is Australian.
Yes. And it's the case of Paul or Paula Denyer.
Who was known as the Frankston Serial Killer.
Okay, well, here we go with the Frankston Serial Killer.
Paul Denyer was born on the 14th of April 1972 in Campbelltown on the outskirts of Sydney in New South Wales. He was one of a large family. In fact, there were five sons and one daughter. And his mother and father had emigrated from Britain to Australia in 1965, the so-called £10 migrants. And in 1981, the entire family, six children...
Sorry, interrupt. What's a £10 migrant?
Oh, at one point, the Australians were keen to encourage people to leave Britain and settle in Australia. And it was known as the £10 enticement. You could get a visa for £10.
Oh, so you could go for a tenner.
Yeah, provided you paid the fare.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Sorry. Yeah. Anyway, so they've got
six children. They moved from Sydney, first of all, to Melbourne. And then, to Brisbane, Adelaide, and then to Melbourne. They moved around a lot. And it would be safe to say that Paul, who isn't the eldest of the children, was an uncomfortable boy who, when he reached adolescence, he found the moving around difficult. And when they finally settled in Melbourne, he just couldn't fit in. It should also be added that there was a family joke about Paul that at one point when he was small, he rolled off a bench and hit his head on the floor.
Oh, classic.
The classic.
Classic.
Hit his head.
Did they hit the head when they were a baby?
Yep.
Serial killer situation.
So, anyway, gets to puberty and becomes increasingly dysfunctional. At 13, he was arrested for stealing a car. And before that, he'd slashed the throat of his sister's teddy bear. And another classic that we're all too familiar with, he attacks the family cat.
Hmm.
And kills it, cuts its throat, and hangs it from a tree.
That's disturbed.
But how many times have we heard?
Many times.
Many times. At 15, he was arrested for assaulting a fellow student at school. Left without any real qualifications and couldn't hold down a job. He tried to get into the police, the Victoria Police, but they wouldn't have him. By this point, he's a pudgy, round-faced, overweight, unhappy young man with very low self-esteem and very low confidence. I'm not making excuses, but he was a dysfunctional misfit. There's no two ways about it.
Mm-hmm.
What we don't know, and what we'll never know, is what set him off. What was the trigger that set suddenly, in the first months of 1993, when he's before his 20th and 21st birthday, he suddenly starts stalking women in the suburb of Melbourne that he's living in with his family, which is called Frankston.
Okay.
The first attack was on the flat of a girl he knew called Donna Vaines, who he gets into the flat and kills her cat, disembowels it, covers the walls and furniture with cuts. Some of her baby's clothes are cut with a very sharp knife. And he writes, "Donna, you're dead," in the cat's blood on the wall.
Ugh.
She came back to discover this horrendous scene and immediately moved in with her sister. She couldn't bear to go back to the flat. Ironically, her sister was living next to Paul Denyer, who at that point was living with his girlfriend.
Okay.
What in Australia they call units and we would call flats.
Okay.
They're adjoining.
Yeah. Flats.
However, the attack on Donna Vaines and the stalking of women isn't the end of it. And on Friday, June the 11th, 1993, Denyer attacks an 18-year-old called Elizabeth Stevens, who's moved to Melbourne from Tasmania in that year, January that year. She's living with an aunt and uncle, but was abducted by Denyer on her way home from a bus stop. It was a Friday, around 7 p.m. Next morning, her partially clothed body was found in a nature reserve nearby. She'd been strangled, stabbed, had her throat cut, slashed, and a criss-cross pattern was carved across her breasts.
He likes knives.
certainly likes knives. What set that off is a matter for conjecture. We will come to what the first explanation was,
mm-hmm.
but there could be a second explanation.
Okay.
What we don't know is where the trigger came from.
Well, probably something domestic if he was still living with his girlfriend.
I think it highly likely. Or this sense that, as he was to say himself later, I hate women.
Mm.
However, on Thursday, the 8th of July, in other words, give or take 4 weeks later, at again about 10 to 6 in the evening, Denier attacks a rather older woman called Rosa Toth, who was in her early 40s, on her way home from the railway station. And he drags her into a nearby nature reserve. It's quite a... it's not a suburb with houses all close together. There's quite a lot of greenery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's parks. We would call it parks and they would call it a nature reserve. He held a fake gun to her head and she pretended, quick-witted this, she pretended to submit and then literally broke free and ran away. Ran into the road. He ran after her. She tried to get a car to stop. It wouldn't. He grabs her again. She breaks away again. Finally, someone stops. He runs into the nature reserve.
Dramatic.
Very, very dramatic.
Well done, her running away.
Yes, what terrific. I mean, amazing thing. Well, this clearly infuriated Denier. Because less than an hour later, on that same July the 8th, 1993, he abducts a young woman called Deborah Freem, who's 22. She's just had a baby, 12 days old, a son called Jake. And she leaves him with a male friend in the flat and she goes to get some milk from a local convenience store, not very far from Kananook Railway Station. Now, Denier was later to explain that he saw her go into the convenience store and noticed that she'd left the car open. So it was a four-door car. So he climbed into the back of the car and crouched down.
Mm-hmm.
And she came back with the groceries and obviously, you know, various things in her arms. But it opens the door, gets in, puts the key in the ignition, and then he jumps out.
And grabs her.
And again, the same fake gun.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's one of those, we often say to each other, don't we, darling, that it brings tears to your eyes. Here is a new young mother, a mere 22 years old, who has the misfortune to come across a man who has been thwarted earlier that evening,
mm-hmm.
or late afternoon, and is clearly determined to take another victim. In fact, though she was reported missing that day, it wasn't until on the Thursday, it wasn't until the Monday morning, the 12th of July, that her partially clothed body was found again on a nature reserve. She'd also been strangled, savagely slashed, had her throat cut. Now, a completely random victim.
Mm.
All these are completely random victims.
Yeah.
There's no...
Just
opportunist. There's no particular type. In other words, it's not the Bundy. Oh, they must be a middle parting and hair onto their shoulders. It's not that.
They don't look like his mother or his ex-girlfriend or any of those things.
There's none of those classic formulae.
And also, the other thing is he's using lots of different strangling, slashing, stabbing.
Yes.
It's quite unusual for a serial killer to use more than one type of method of killing.
I think it's an outburst of the most extraordinary rage, don't you? I mean, he must just be intoxicated with rage so that he throws... He's quite astute, though. There are no DNA matches on either of the first two victims.
When is this happening?
93. Yes. We're talking about 1993.
Not that long ago.
No, it wasn't. Finally, on Friday the 30th of July, in other words, a week or three later, Denier strikes again. This time, again, it's a Friday. Again, it's a girl walking home, and this time she's got a bicycle. She's a 17-year-old schoolgirl called Natalie Russell, who is ignored by this time, of course. There were quite a lot of public warnings in the Melbourne suburbs saying, you know, be very careful about what you're doing, where you're going. Anyway, she ignores the public warnings, I suppose, because she doesn't take it very seriously, and takes a shortcut towards her home, which is between two golf courses. And Denya has prepared this path. It's got netting on either side of the path. It's between the two golf courses. And he's cut a hole. In fact, he's cut three holes at different points along the path.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the green chain killer in
yes.
this game? Okay. Not dissimilar.
Yeah.
He's cut three holes. And he literally snatches her. She's got off the bike. He snatches her and drags her through one of the holes he's cut in the wire. By 8 o'clock that evening, her family have raised the alarm.
Mm-hmm.
She'd been dragged from the path into the adjacent scrub, but she'd put up a considerable fight. This time, there was DNA evidence from him, not... whereas that, as I'd be saying, there was none in the case of either Freem or Elizabeth Stevens. And so, one local resident had noticed earlier that afternoon a man acting suspiciously in a very old and rusty yellow Toyota Camry, and had taken the precaution of taking the registration number. The car had no plates. And it's a very, you know, very different. It wasn't wearing plates, but he didn't have a registration number. And reported this registration number to the police. Now you have two different pieces of information. One, the wonderful Rosa Toth had given the police a decent description of the man.
Yeah.
He was 18 to 20, round face, blue eyes, pudgy. And now you have this rusty Camry with a man clearly watching this particular path.
And some DNA evidence.
And some DNA evidence. So we'll just take a little break there. It doesn't take the police very long to discover that the rusty yellow Toyota is registered to no other than Paul Charles Denyer. And on the 31st of July, the day after the killing, they interview Denyer, who is living with his girlfriend next to Donna Vane's sister still. Denyer denies everything. No, I might have been at those scenes, but no, I mean, it's nothing to do with me, nothing to do with me. So the following day, the 1st of August, the police asked for a DNA sample from Denyer. And Denyer quickly realises that the game is rapidly up, because within a matter of an hour, he starts to confess to all three killings and the abduction. Because he realises there must be DNA from him on the last victim,
yeah.
on Natalie. And he starts a very, very lengthy confession. He starts to tell the police that he's been stalking women in the area for years. And he said he had a desire to kill from the age of 14, because he hated women and girls. It's an odd one. Here we have clearly a young man, now just 21, outraged about something and acting in this most extraordinary, fetishistic way, not only killing his victims, but absolutely mutilating them, really, mm-hmm. with his knives and all that.
Yeah.
He was diagnosed as suffering from sadistic personality disorder.
Sadistic personality. I've not heard that before.
Nor me. But that was what the diagnosis was.
Sadistic personality disorder.
Yeah. And he was given 3 life sentences on the 31st of December, 1993. So he kills 3 women in a space of 7 weeks.
Yeah.
And attempts to abduct and would have killed a fourth had she not been... And in fact, in July 1994, his sentence was reduced slightly to a non-parole period of 30 years. It was regarded, and there is a case in this country of Jamie Reynolds, a 21-year-old who committed only one murder, but was given a whole life tariff.
Yeah, well, that was a despicable murder.
It was.
Which we have covered.
We have. But these are not, this is true serial killer. There are three
yeah,
deaths.
Yeah, yeah.
But the reduction was because of Denya's age, that he was still, 21-year-old.
Mm.
In 10 years pass, and all of a sudden, Denya starts to write to people, starting with his brother, one of his brothers, whom he's accused at one point in his trial of abusing him as a child, as some kind of exculpation, I suppose.
Mm.
He writes to the brother saying, "Oh, I'm terribly sorry. I didn't mean to do it. And I should tell you, I don't hate women." And gradually the news emerges that, in fact, he's written a series of letters which came to be known as the Paul Denya letters, explaining that he identified himself as a woman in 2003.
That's interesting.
It is extremely interesting. He writes, and it's worth quoting, "I committed these disgusting crimes not because I hated women, but because I have never really felt that I was male."
I mean, I can see the kind of... I mean, I don't claim to know that much about this sort of thing, but I can see how if you felt very frustrated in your own body and that you actually felt more like a woman than a man, maybe you would... be frustrated and take it. I mean, if you had a psychopathic tendencies.
Well, you're right. It is very interesting.
I don't know.
None of the female victims were sexually assaulted.
That is true. But they were horribly mutilated.
They were horribly mutilated. And they were certainly killed by Denya.
No, there doesn't seem to be a sexual motive to the killings at all.
It's just random killing.
Yeah.
Essentially.
It's more the slashing that interests me.
Yeah.
Not interest. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It's like, seems to be the significant, the slashing, because if he slashed the cat's throat, the teddy bear's throat, slashed the furniture, slashed the Donna's cat's throat, slashed stuff in her house.
Yes.
The slashing thing.
Yes.
And cutting into
That's a very
flesh.
Good point, because one of the things that, by way of explanation at one point, Denya said, was that he was addicted to particularly horrible horror movies, including one called The Stepfather, which involves quite a lot of slashing, apparently. I'm glad to say I haven't seen it, but...
I mean, it is...
I have always believed, incidentally, that videos can, with the right personality, do terrible damage.
100%. Films, video games, television...
Terrible
totally,
damage.
Totally.
Terrible.
Yeah, hugely. There is, I mean, again, not an expert, but the slashing thing, like self-harm, from what I've read about that, is that people find a kind of release in that cutting.
Yes. Instead of self-harming, he harms other people.
Yeah.
I mean, he did write at one point in the so-called Paul Denya letters, "I've always wanted to kill, waiting for the right time, waiting for that silent alarm to trigger me off."
Not that we know what that was.
No, we don't, I'm afraid. But he certainly admitted that. Now, okay, in the wake of the so-called Paul Denya letters, he begins wearing women's clothes in prison. asked for cosmetics, and which is all against regulations in the Australian prison system, and then asks for gender realignment surgery.
Reassignment. Realignment would be different.
Reassignment, sorry, forgive me. All of which are refused.
That's interesting. That's actually allowed in American penal system. Mm.
He can't legally change his name, but he insists now on being called Paula Denyer.
Interesting.
And if you look him up on your handy phone, you will see a picture of him wearing what looks like a very large dress.
Paula.
Yeah.
Paul. Something wrong with my phone. Weird. Denya.
Well, I should...
Oh,
go.
Yes.
There you go.
Oh, I see, yeah. He sort of put plaits in his... Or she.
Yes, she. Or he.
Has put plaits in her hair.
Yes.
She's wearing a sort of large sweatshirt or sweater dress.
Yes, a sort of sweater dress, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. It is important to remember that she is theoretically able to apply for parole in 2023.
Mm, not long away.
No.
And amongst all of the letters and everything, has she said anything about feeling remorseful or...
No.
Any of those things?
I think that may well count against her when the question of parole comes forward.
Yeah, agreed. That's very interesting. I've never heard of her before.
No, it is a very, very interesting. And I think the motivation point and why we're struggling to get the motivation is it really isn't clear. Did she hate women, or was it that she couldn't, she didn't feel male? I mean, to be honest, I'm slightly struggling myself. I don't quite know.
I wonder if there's ever, you can never kind of give a justification for something. You know, we always talk about all the dropped on the head or the abused when you're
children,
younger, or, you know, difficult growing up, or...
terrifying puberty.
Yeah.
Cruelty to animals, yeah. The family, pets.
But is there ever a sort of psychological explanation for, or justification for killing?
I don't think there
because otherwise, because we can't, because as we often say, there's lots of people who go through difficult times and don't do that.
I quite agree. And I think even more important, as we've said to each other on numerous occasions, there can't be any justification, genuinely there can't be, for taking a human life. No amount of, oh, I was dropped on my head, or, you know, my stepfather abused me. In itself, it simply is not enough.
Yeah.
There has to be something. Now, does that lead us back, darling? Does it lead us back to the evil gene argument?
Yes, or the nature-nurture argument.
Yes, the nature-nurture argument.
Yeah, are people born evil?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it does. I suppose every subject brings us back to that question.
Well, in a way, because it's the unanswerable question, isn't it?
Yeah. Because I think there is because there are some people that we talk about who, Beverly Allitt?
Mm-hmm.
She's just like an evil person who just wanted attention. Nothing bad happened to her. She was from a very nice family, you know, etc. And then some people we may talk about who genuinely had a really horrific time growing up.
Yes.
And then they sort of turn to murder, or
they
sort of led by example of how awful their own life. You know, they don't value life. So that's different.
Yes.
Not excusable, but it's you can see perhaps more reason.
Well, I think Denyer is very interesting because, as I say, utterly random. He was 21 when the attacks took place. No sexual attack on the female victims, although they were all mercilessly mutilated, and there's no doubt about that. But it wasn't specifically genital mutilation.
Mm. We don't know whether he got sexual gratification from that mutilation or not.
No, we don't. We don't. Which makes him something of an enigma.
Mm, interesting.
And so the Frankston serial killer, otherwise known as Paula Denyer now, and we must call her that, is a most fascinating case.
Yeah, really interesting. Thanks, Dad. I didn't know anything about that at all. I hope people found that interesting. And to any of our listeners in Australia, do write to us and let us know.
Yes, please
do.
More
about that.
You may have other explanations, for example, that I'm not aware of.
Yeah.
I'm perfectly happy to listen and indeed to put them in a podcast in the future.
Yeah, for
but
sure.
It's a fascinating and unlikely case. And for such a young man to act so violently in such a short period of time, something set that off. However, let's just finish up with something a little more cheerful. What are you doing this week?
Nothing. I'm quite quiet at the moment, so it's not that I'm complaining.
Oh, wow. Don't complain, my darling.
I'm not complaining.
That's very good. Well,
you're much busier than me at the moment.
Well, I'm just running from pillar to post. That would be
every time I write to Jeffrey saying, can you do this at this time? He's like, well, I've got this at this and I've got this at this time. And I couldn't do this. I can do this time, but not this time.
Yeah, I'm a bit busy.
Bit busy.
But it's... we should also, as we always do, thank all the people that help us.
Oh, yes, definitely. May we thank Poppy Damon, our producer, and Barney, who has helped with the music and... with the sound, and my brother Dan, who does our music, and my friend George, who drew our caricature, and my friend and colleague Hannah, who's helped us a lot with all things podcast.
And we've gone on some kind of... You sent me a note.
And Audio Boom, who are very supportive and have helped us get on the Apple banner, which means that when you go on to the podcast page on iTunes or Apple, on the Apple Store, we sort of come up, our pick comes up, so we're hoping more people will...
I can't imagine it. That must help.
We hope it increased traffic. Hello, if you're a new listener.
Yes, please. Yeah, tell a friend.
And yes, please all tell a friend. We're really trying to up our listenerships. We've been working extremely hard, as you all know. And so if every one of you can tell just one more friend or subscribe to us or write us a review, because that really helps when trying to get new listeners.
I got a note this week from a lady who was telling me about a British true crime book.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, you know, send me a copy and I'll certainly mention it on the podcast. And she said, well, I love your podcast.
Oh, that's nice.
I was very, absolutely out of the blue.
I was talking to the producer of Don't Fuck With Cats. Sorry, excuse my language. I told him to listen to our podcast, so he downloaded it. So maybe he will listen to it too.
Let's hope so.
Most of all, thank you, Dad, for doing all the hard work.
It's a pleasure. And as I always say, as this case of Paula Denyer proves, bad things happen to good people, so do